From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. ALS is incurable. It's a progressive attack on nerve cells that control voluntary movements, like breathing. We meet two men diagnosed with ALS who are raising awareness and millions of dollars for Answer ALS, an unorthodox way to crowdsource research. And we talk to research director Dr. Jeffrey Rothstein about how the Answer ALS approach mimics research on cancer by applying stem cell technology.
We can sample blood from patients and create that biopsy of their brain or spinal cord that we don't otherwise have, and now begin to analyze in every biological pathway possible so we can be then in equal ground with cancer.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Think about what it means to receive the tough diagnosis of an incurable disease. What happens? ALS, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, is a progressive neurodegenerative disease that affects nerve cells in a person's brain and spinal cord. It ends in death. Later in the show, we'll hear from two men with ALS who are leveraging their experiences to raise awareness and millions of dollars for Answer ALS, an unconventional crowdsource approach to ALS research. Joining us now is the executive director of the Answer ALS Research Program, Dr. Jeffrey Rothstein. Rothstein also directs the Robert Packard Center for ALS Research at Johns Hopkins University, and he's a professor of neurology at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. Welcome, Jeff.
Good morning. Thank you, Sheila.
What is ALS?
So ALS is an adult neurodegenerative disease. It's in the same category as, say, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. These are the diseases that tend to affect us midlife, progressive, and rob us of various neurologic functions. ALS is unique in that it robs an individual of their ability to move voluntary muscles, arms, legs, the ability to swallow, and most importantly, the ability to breathe. And without the ability to breathe and take in air, you can't live. So ALS, as you mentioned in your introduction, is a uniformly fatal disease. Typically, it's fatal within about 2 to 5 years. And there are exceptions. Some patients, unfortunately, can pass away within the first few months of their first symptoms, and others can live for decades.
So there are different types of ALS?
There are different clinical types.
What does that mean?
ALS is a single disease that affects, at the biological level, what are known as motor neurons, the cells in your brain and spinal cord that control muscles. But there are many different ways in which those motor neurons can die, which is the underlying event in ALS. And those different ways in which they die underlie different principles. So on the outside, it looks like a common weakness, but underlying that are potentially different biological events that lead to that disease. And that's very important because ultimately therapies are usually targeted at what is the underlying biological event. An example of that that's perhaps maybe less confusing or more obvious to many people are cancers. Now, today, if someone has a melanoma, skin cancer, or breast cancer, or prostate cancer, when I trained in medicine decades ago, you'd look under the microscope and you'd see those are cancer cells. And we'd treat patients with melanoma, skin cancer, or breast cancer all the same way with a set of drugs, and we'd often fail. Part of that is, under the microscope, those cells look alike, but why they have a cancer varies from patient to patient to patient. And so once you begin to analyze those tissues biologically, meaning the molecular, the DNA and RNA nature of those cancers, we began to learn that although they look alike and are still a tumor, a mass in someone, the biological event that started that cancer varies from patient to patient to patient. And that led, in cancers, the personalization of cancer therapy. So today, women, when they have breast cancer, can get a different set of drugs depending on that biological phenotype, or the personalization.
And that different set of drugs is trying to undo the specific triggering biological event that started that cancer?
Correct. Now, you started by asking me about ALS. Although the patients can clinically vary, there's nothing about them that allows us to tell us, is the reason that they have the disease different from patient to patient to patient? Now, I left that one important element to this. 90% of ALS patients, and this, by the way, applies, I'm about to say, to Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, 90% of the patients, they come to us with no clear prior history of disease. They didn't have it in their family. And family histories are important in any disease. When the disease is in the family, that often means there's a genetic cause, a defined defect in their DNA that they inherited. In 10% of patients with ALS, there's clearly a family history, and that's called familial ALS. Now, it has a different name, but clinically, those patients look no different than the patient who had no family history. So the clinical phenotype, what the patient looks like, is essentially identical between an inherited form of the disease and sporadic. Now, why is that so important? Because the inherited form, I can develop drugs. I, by the way, is just a royal we kind of comment. I can develop drugs.
The medical establishment.
Yes. That are very specific for the inherited form, but have no value at all in the sporadic form. How do I know that? Because I know the exact starting point of their disease. Again, coming back to cancer, we do that in cancer today because we take the tissue from a patient and we find out what's different among the different cancers to target the right drug to the right patient.
So is that the idea behind ANSWER ALS?
It's exactly the idea. ANSWER ALS is, you could argue, it's like plagiarism. We're stealing from the playbook of cancer. But there's a huge difference. Most patients know, once you eventually go to clinics, that it's pretty easy for us to sample your body. You have a skin cancer, we do a little biopsy. You have a breast tumor, we sample the tumor. You have prostate, we put a needle in. And so we can sample most tissues and figure out what's the underlying biological event for those cancers. Your brain and spinal cord, the origin of all neurologic diseases, are completely different. One, your brain cannot regenerate. As you and I both know, if you cut your skin or we do a biopsy, the skin heals. It replaces itself. Your brain cannot do that. Your spinal cord, which is about the width of an average adult index finger, about 2.5 feet long, if I take a chunk of that out, you're permanently paralyzed. You're permanently numb. So I can't actually take chunks of your spinal cord and brain. The very essence of what we do in cancers, we cannot touch in neurologic disease, be it Alzheimer's, ALS, Parkinson's. So that very important starting point, how do we differentiate a sporadic versus a familial? How do we begin to find out the biological underpinnings of the disease? Because let me make it very clear, it's the biological underpinnings that allow us to find drugs, effective drugs for these diseases. So ANSWER ALS took on that in a big way, and we're able to do that because of a technology known as stem cells. We can now take a bit of your skin, actually we even can take a simple sample of blood, and we can convert your blood into stem cells, which we then can convert into your actual brain cells. So we can create the biopsy of you by using your blood. Blood's easy to get from anyone. Mm-hmm. Children, adults, doesn't matter. We can get blood. And so ANSWER ALS is based on that new technology where we can sample blood from patients and create that biopsy of their brain or spinal cord that we don't otherwise have, and now begin to analyze in every biological pathway possible, so we can be then in equal ground with cancer.
That's Dr. Jeffrey Rothstein, Executive Director of ANSWER ALS, a crowdsourced approach to research on ALS, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He's a professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins and directs the Robert Packard Center for ALS Research there. How did you become involved with ANSWER ALS?
So I've, as a clinician scientist, I've been studying ALS for decades. It actually began with a meeting that Steve Gleason, who's a football player from New Orleans, and had asked me and a few others to put together a meeting of clinicians and scientists, basic and clinical scientists, along with the patient community to approach ALS in a different way, a very patient-oriented way. And we spent a few days just talking about what are the barriers, what's going on in ALS. And at the end of this meeting, the idea was to begin to formulate a plan, a new plan to address ALS. If I'm honest, we ended that meeting and we came up with an idea of what we should be studying, and I actually threw that out. Because one of the speakers in the audience had said, well, what if we could really study patients individually and build these stem cells from patients that I mentioned to you earlier? and use them as a platform to study the therapy that would apply to each of those patients. That's a very different approach, an approach that certainly would not be taken on by industry. What it ended up being, what we started this program as, was the idea is if we could collect enough patients around the country, we wanted a true geographic diversity. So we picked clinics around the country where we would follow and collect about 1,000 patients. And at the very first visit, we would collect lots of clinical information, and we would collect blood, the very blood I mentioned we can make stem cells from. And for every one of those 1,000 patients, we would build these stem cells. We'd convert them into the patient's brain cells, and then we would analyze them in many different ways, their DNA, their whole genome, how the environment affects our DNA in those brain cells, the RNA that comes from DNA, the protein that comes from DNA, their metabolism, even their microbiome we would have samples from as well. So that's a biological profile, but we knew there's still a clinical element to the disease. And although patients can't make it to clinic always very often because of the illness, we built an app for an iPhone and an Android. So even if they couldn't come, we'd collect additional information at home, weekly, daily, how they speak, how they interpret images. And the combination of all of those data amounts to 6 billion data points per patient.
Oh, my goodness.
A fair amount of data. The idea would be then to take all of the data and integrate it. And they're using tools known as artificial intelligence. You begin to integrate the clinical data, the app data, and all that biological data, and see if we put that together, would we find that there are actually biological different groups of ALS patients? If we were able to do that, we would actually then have a platform be to not just identify those differences, but actually we now have their brain cells. We could study those cells with drugs that would fix those pathways. So it's not just we find the patient's pathways. We could use that same platform to find future drugs. And then if it all worked out in the future, the next cohort of patients begin to say, you're group A, you're group B. We think you have a defect, and I'll make this up for our conversation. Aspirin might be useful in you, which would not be useful, say, in another group. That's the initial personalization of the process. Now, this is a group of about 100 investigators, their labs, postdocs, graduate students. As we generated the data, we had put it online for other researchers, and not just academic researchers, but companies as well. Because the reality is, whatever we do, a company's going to have to develop the drug. Academics don't typically develop drugs. So we wanted them as part of the mix. So even today, all of those stem cells we generated, all of the data as we generate, is available for researchers around the country. By the way, this is not just useful for ALS. Just this tool alone, this population of data and biological information, can help someone who's studying Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's.
What is the ultimate goal of your research?
Ultimately, a drug that effectively changes the course for patients. I'd love to be able to use the word cure, but I've learned after many years of doing this that I don't ever offer the cure to a patient because I know that I can't. Not that I don't want to, but I can't. That would be false advertising, if you will. I'm reasonably certain that this will eventually lead to drugs that could slow the disease down and at minimum, or at best, maybe almost best, halt the disease.
This is so interesting. Thank you for explaining it to us.
Sure. My pleasure.
Dr. Jeffrey Rothstein, professor of neurology at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, is executive director of the ANSWER ALS Research Program. He also heads the Robert Packard Center for ALS Research at JHU. We have a link to more information about ANSWER ALS at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Short break now, On the Record. Then we'll talk with two ALS patients who are leveraging their experiences to raise awareness and funds for ANSWER ALS. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about ANSWER ALS, an unconventional approach to ALS research. ALS, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, is a progressive neurodegenerative disease that affects nerve cells in a person's brain and spinal cord. Earlier, Dr. Jeffrey Rothstein, professor of neurology at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, explained the Answer ALS research program, which he heads. Joining us now are two Answer ALS participants. They also each serve on the nonprofit's board. Ed Rapp is chairman and a former president of the Caterpillar Group. He chairs the Answer ALS Advisory Board. He's joining us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome to the show, Ed.
No, thanks, Sheila. It's nice to join you.
Peter Warlick is a vice president at American Airlines and co-chairs the Answer ALS Board's Finance Committee. He's joining us by phone from Dallas, Texas. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Sheila.
Ed, when were you diagnosed? What were the circumstances?
You know, Sheila, I'd been a 3 to 4 mile a morning jogger for 35 years, and it was over Christmas vacation in 2014 that I was out running with my son, and about every 15 steps, my left toe would catch. And, you know, I'd just come off a plane from Singapore. I figured it was, you know, a combination of jet lag and maybe, you know, some nerves in the back or something. But as I went on throughout the vacation, it just kept happening. And then I went on the journey that most ALS patients go on, because the only way you get to diagnosis is really by eliminating everything else. And that journey, you know, concluded for me in November of 2015 at the Mayo Clinic with the utterance of the words, you know, you have ALS.
Peter, was your diagnosis such a long process?
Mine was not. I had a slightly different experience. It was the summer of 2015, and I was actually watching some television, and I noticed that my right quad muscle was fluttering. And I had an upcoming executive physical a few weeks later, at which I showed the doctor, and that was the start of about a 2 month journey through the process of diagnosis.
And you both had big decisions to make once you got that diagnosis.
The decision, you know, process, you know, for me was one. You know, at least in my situation, do I retire? I was in the executive office at CAT, and I just decided that, you know, the best thing to do for the company was to step down and let the next capable leader step up. Number two was, you know, do we stay quiet about the disease, or are we open and transparent? And I think I always prided myself at work in being transparent with employees. And then the third is where we're going to get involved in the broader effort of ALS. And as a family, we just decided it was something we had an obligation to do.
And obviously, I want to pick up there, but Peter, you decided to keep working at American.
I did, for a couple of reasons. One, I have small children, and I felt that, you know, demonstrating to them that life is still normal, even after a diagnosis of the severity of this, would be helpful to them to see Dad still go to the office. And so I chose to continue to work, and it's been a godsend.
Ed, when did you find out about Answer ALS, and why did you want to become involved?
You know, as I was searching for a neurologist I was going to work with, kind of one of my search criteria was I wanted to go into an environment that had an open and collaborative environment. I guess my years at Caterpillar had taught me great innovation comes from great collaboration. From that research, it led me to, you know, the Packard Center at Hopkins, which led me to Jeff Rothstein. And, you know, Dr. Rothstein, I think, leads in this field in terms of driving collaboration. And from that introduction, it led to, you know, my involvement and participation in Answer ALS.
And Peter, did you go looking too?
I did. In addition to looking for you know, second opinions and getting a grasp of the severity of the disease, I also began to think about how could I impact change. And like Ed, collaboration is something that to me is key. And so when I found Answer ALS, it resonated strongly that here finally was a program that made sense to me.
You're both involved in fundraising for Answer ALS. Where does the funding come from?
Yeah, what I think Peter and I did, you know, a similar approach is through, you know, Aviators Against ALS in mind called Stay Strong. And you know, the combination between the two of us, you know, has been over $10 million of the funding toward Answer ALS. And we're following in the footsteps of some great leaders, guys like Lee Rizzuto, Jay Fishman, who really originally got the program up and running. You know, the program to execute the total scope of the program is going to be somewhere north of $40 million. And we're very close to the funding goals, all from private donations. And I think the key to the private donations, it allows us through to really dictate the terms of the project, collaboration, open source in terms of sharing the data for free. You know, in addition to dedicated doctors, patients, the people that have provided the funding, we've been very pleased to see the amount of engagement from the business community. Microsoft has been just a great partner in donating all the storage capacity required for the data that we're storing. IBM has worked with us in terms of the mobile app and analytics. It's really an amazing gathering of resources from different places, all trying to come together to innovate, like I said, to solve what those that gone before us have not been able to solve.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about Answer ALS, a crowdsourced approach to ALS research. I'm speaking with Ed Rapp, the nonprofit's advisory board chairman, and Peter Warlick, co-chair of the board's finance committee. What do you pick up from others in the ALS community about what they think of the Answer ALS approach, Ed?
I think it resonates with the ALS patient population because they have sat on the sidelines and watched failure after failure in terms of the drug trials. And I think what we're doing is deploying capability that didn't exist in the past. You know, you go back 10 years ago, the cost of genetic sequencing was, one, expensive and took a lot of time. The ability to create iPS cells didn't exist. The ability to store large amounts of data that we're gathering weren't there. The artificial intelligence tools to analyze the data didn't exist. And so I think I see the project embracing capabilities that have developed and then applying it to a problem that, that people have failed to solve, you know, in the past.
Peter, what do you pick up from others who have ALS?
I believe that it provides them hope, because they see an organization that is being privately funded that is fundamentally going after the question, what is ALS? It is giving them a perspective that we're not just trying to another drug that frequently fails. This is fundamentally going after the base problem of the disease, which, what is it? So I think this gives them, though, the perspective that this will lead to a series of potential drug trials, but with much greater knowledge, not throwing spaghetti against the wall.
Let me ask you both, what would you most like listeners to understand about the disease ALS?
Well, I think, first of all, from a patient perspective, I want them to understand it's not just about the patient, it's about the network, the caregivers that have to be involved. I mean, it's a heavy lift. And you know, I think that's the one thing that, while people talk about a small number of ALS patients, the incident rate's not that much different than MS. The reason you don't notice it as much is that the life expectancy is much shorter. But I think the thing for all of them to understand is it takes a village to support a patient with ALS. I think Peter and I are both blessed, you know, with strong families and support networks to help us on that journey.
Peter, what would you like listeners to understand?
I would say that it is a disease that is completely unforgiving. It is constant. Every day there's a slow progression, or there's a progression. You're going to only be worse tomorrow than you are today. And from an emotional and you know, cerebral perspective, that is a very, very difficult concept to grasp when there is no, you know, truly, really no outcome other than one will ultimately pass away.
And what would you like people to know about Answer ALS, the research?
Well, I would like people to understand that here, using a collaborative approach, there's a team of scientists and clinicians that are working together using cutting-edge technology that I truly believe will make a difference. and for the future prognosis for other patients who are diagnosed with this pretty brutal disease.
Ed, what thought would you like people to take away about cancer ALS?
I think for what I want them to know is there is reason for hope. You know, I don't think Peter or myself have gotten involved in Answer ALS because we see it as a pathway to save ourselves. If you just look at, you know, the timeline from discovery of a subgroup to testing of, you know, drugs through a trial to getting them to market, it's a long timeline.
Yeah.
And I think both of us are focused on doing this in a way that ensures that the next generation doesn't have to deal with the reality of our current generation, which is a lot of people consider an ALS diagnosis, you know, a death sentence. And I just want people to know there is hope. And if we can discover the subgroups of ALS, you know, through the work we're doing, I think it puts us on a path where we totally change the profile of this disease.
I'm grateful to you both for talking to us about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was absolutely my pleasure.
Ed Rapp is the Answer ALS Advisory Board Chair, and Peter Warlick is Finance Committee Co-Chair. Both men were diagnosed with ALS in 2015. We've got more information about Answer ALS at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. On the Record's director and engineer is Nathan Sterner. Maureen Harvey and Melissa Gear produced the program. John Ahrens wrote and recorded the On the Record theme music. Izzy Hedelman is our intern. And I'm your host, Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.